Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app. Well, wherever you get your podcast, we appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do our interview. We thought we was going to get one person. That one person ain't come through. So luckily, coming out the bullpen, I went with one of these right here. Tapped that arm, went and got him out the First Take studio. Dominique Foxworth. What in up? The house.
Thanks for having me.
What's going on, man? Got all that makeup on? Your skin looking all even?
Oh, yeah. I'm feeling handsome right now. I mean, it's also sitting across from Max and Stephen A. It's not much competition.
Look at that hairline, too.
It's hanging in there, man. It's fighting.
You know, it is fighting. I will say, like, I'm not trying to hate, per se. Nah. I see where the problem areas.
Oh yeah, it's the corners. They running that cover two on me.
Yeah,
it's slow
crazy.
Cover two. They're getting off the hash real slowly. So I got a good 5-10 left in me. I'm good.
Yeah, the quarters are dropping back to take away the flats. Right? Like this is happening.
That's better though. I'd rather have that than the cover three. You get the cover three right down the middle.
Yeah.
You get that cul-de-sac. That's a bad look.
Yeah. You know what? My brother came to the house yesterday. You know how it goes. You know, if your brother, you know, brother went bald and knew it was going to come for me. And I was watching because he'd been at the ball kick for a while, but I see it. I'm like, oh no, the George Jefferson is because he's 13 years older than me.
Yeah.
So I get to see the future up there.
My brother's 2 years older than me and his hairline gave out. He didn't lose the hairline. He got it weak in the back. It started getting weak in the back. Then it started getting weak right on top. The hairline was still there, but it was just like weak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he had to give it up. He's bald now.
See,
so.
I could have gone longer if I had gone weak in the back, right? But
yeah.
I had the corners run away first. And you're right. I am tall. Nobody will know the difference. Although high noon, cause all them cameras, it'd have been a snitching situation.
Yeah. But I feel like I keep it low. So I feel comfortable that when I have to come on home, it won't be bad. The worst thing you can do is to fight it. Like,
yeah.
when I get to the moment, I'm going to be honest with myself. I get to the moment when I know that it's point of no return. I'm just going to go ahead and shave it. Just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, you know what, though? I got to admit, I fought.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like it. Like, it wasn't like I was not in denial. I knew that once you go, there's no coming back. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe it's one of them things that it's easy for me to say because I haven't had to fight it.
Yeah.
Because my hairline is definitely a good inch further than it was when I was 18. It's back. So maybe it's time to...
You can do okay with back as long as back is fairly even. You know, now you get to that point, you know, Stephen A, right?
Yeah. Like he in order to make it straight.
Yeah, he in the prevent. You know what I'm saying? That you can have anything you want. It's 30-19 and you can have anything you want in front of the marker. He ain't cover four.
Keep him in front and inside. Don't let him get out of bounds or in the end zone, baby.
Romeo Crennel coordinating his. Like that's how it goes.
Oh,
he laughed
God.
At mine. I can laugh at his. This is what the game is now. Let's get to something that was funny and then stop being funny, which is Antonio Brown. It was funny.
It was so much fun.
It was.
And we had to be careful, tiptoe around his mental health, but we could evade that and still find the jokes.
Yes.
No room for jokes no more.
No. And see, the thing, like, I was curious what your thought was just about, like, what was going on with him in Oakland, because we talked about it a little bit, and I was amazed at how many people were riding for Antonio Brown in this circumstance.
And so I think part of what I wanted to do when I came to ESPN several years ago was maintain my loyalty to players in almost all situations. Because we come here and we become part of the machine and we out here blaming guys and we doing all this stuff and I don't want to do that. And we don't see the perspective that we saw when we was in the locker room.
Right.
I don't want to be that guy. But AB, I can't, bruh. I can't stand up for you anymore. When he was back there, missing games for the Steelers, like I was finding ways to be like, but you gotta understand his perspective in this. But ain't no way, like even before we get to this latest stuff, there was no way to defend what he was doing out in Oakland. And I was, boy, was I trying. I was bending myself in all types of ways. And, I talked to RC Ryan Clark a couple days ago and I told him like, man, your boy just made me look stupid. Like, cause I'm out here trying to fight for him because I'm like, he gonna come to his senses soon. You gotta understand that logic's gonna prevail, but it never did. And
no,
it was awful.
He had me out here riding for Mike Mayock. I was like,
I heard that.
I was like, what do y'all want this man to do?
Yeah.
Right? You just want this man to be like, no, Antonio, I will put up with anything you ask me to put up with.
I appreciate the intellectual challenge of finding something new in this, because it's easy to be like, man, he don't make no sense. He's crazy. Like you talk about as a word that we shouldn't use, but it's something that we use a lot. And it's easy to do that. And it's easy to say he's wrong. So I've been trying to figure out how, and again, this is prior to the recent allegations, how to explain what he's done up until this point. And the only logical explanation I have is what's important to him is being a celebrity. There's some guys that making the money is important. There's some guys that winning's important, and for everybody, both are important to different degrees. And it seems like only thing that was consistently apparent in every decision that he made was that it was going to make him more famous. We were going to be talking about him more and more, and all the way up until him putting up that video after he got cut from the Raiders and all that stuff. It's just like he wants more attention, and that seems consistent. That's the only way I can explain his behavior, and there's no explaining what he's accused of now.
Yeah, well, like, I remember the first time I remember, like, talking to Ryan Clark mm-hmm. about it. And this was after Antonio had the laptop up while Tomlin was giving the speech
right.
after the game. And what's wild to look at in it is Antonio Brown has no idea anything else that's going on in the room right then. The only thing he sees is himself on the screen, and he just grinning, right? He's got that big old smile on his face. And Ryan's thing was, Ryan's like, no. He doesn't mean any harm. He was like, he's just so self-centered that he is not giving any consideration to anything else that was going around. And people looked at, you know, like people have been hard on Ryan throughout all this and saying Ryan just hating and everything else. But I remember talking to him right then. He was like, no. I'm not hating. I'm just telling you, this is what it is. And I was like, oh, okay, right? And it made perfect sense once he said it. And then everything else, right. just like, he didn't even care if you liked him. Just look at him.
Yeah.
That was the only thing he seemed to care about was being looked at. And then like, I felt like, Something went askew, like somewhere around 2018, right? Because this didn't seem to be nearly as calculated as people would like to make it out to be. None of that. The way he acted at right. the end in Pittsburgh, where you're in the facility, but you're not playing. And then you're like, all right, cool, I'm gonna get in the game. And they're like, nah, dog, you're not getting in the game. We'd rather not make the playoffs. You know, granted, I think they were eliminated by the time it was kickoff anyway. But they're like, nah, we'd rather just not have you out here than to do this. You know how much it takes, given what Gruden was willing to put up with? You know how much it takes for a team in that position to be like, nah, best player on the team, we're good.
Yeah, I absolutely know how much it takes, and Antonio Brown has that. But I think that's consistent with what I've, like, gleaned from watching Antonio Brown is he cares about the attention. And that's all he cares about. And I think that's shown, and he's been possibly the best receiver in the league since he's been a prominent number one receiver at Pittsburgh. And he's not, like, the number one star. I imagine a guy like Odell Beckham falls up in the league and supplants him as number one star without putting up nearly the longevity or the time of success. And I imagine something like that weighs on him, which is why I don't think necessarily that this was like some calculated thing. But I think that he started to realize that being in Oakland wasn't going to do it for him the way that he wanted to do. And I think he certainly wanted out. And I'm not saying that all the way back to the game against the Saints when he didn't play, that he was planning on getting his way to New England. But I think that he was never really planning on sticking in Oakland.
I've talked to people who know him, and they say that when he first got there, he was in.
Yeah.
Like, when he got the deal and everything else, they say that he was in on it. I don't know what this helmet thing wound up being, because, like we talked about, it's a little tricky, but I don't know how much control he's got over any of this stuff yeah. at this point. And even the things that might be logical, they just feel so crazy, yeah. right? Like, the idea that I'm going to ask John Gruden if I can put this audio out as all this drama is swirling around. Even if that's calculated, dog, are you crazy? Who does this? And the answer is, like, Antonio Brown. And so then he winds up with the Patriots. And my thing when he got to the Patriots was, I felt like people were riding out basically according to the premise that he knows he can't get away with it here. Therefore, he will behave differently. And I just don't feel like he's wired like that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that your position and I don't want to put words in your mouth. It's like he's not wired like that, so he won't be able to change his behavior. But my position is whether he's wired like that or not, I'm not sure that he wants to change
yes.
his behavior. Is I think that I always thought that this, as soon as he signed with the Patriots, I thought it was going to be interesting because everyone brings up Randy Moss. See how great that worked? Then they bring up guys like Chad Johnson or Albert Hainsworth and say, see, it didn't work, so they got him out there. This is a unique situation because Randy Moss was fine in the locker room and great on the field. Those other guys were fine in the locker room, bad on the field. There is a very real chance that he was going to be great on the field and a mess in the locker room. And I think that's a different animal, even for a team like the Patriots, of trying to sort through what you do with a guy that will immediately become a big part of your offense, but is doing little weird things to draw attention to him. So like when they have media days and, you know, everyone regurgitates the same thing that Bill Belichick wants them to say before the game, Randy Moss is fine with that because Randy just wanted the ball. Antonio Brown ain't never going to do that. He's going to say what he wants to say. He's going to draw attention to what he wants to draw attention to, and it's him.
And that's a great point because Randy was never a look at me sort of dude, right? Like that wasn't his game at all. Where yes, Antonio Brown absolutely wants to be looked at. So Randy gets here and they're like, look, we don't really like guys to talk to the media. I don't like talking to the media either. Right? You know, like that's the best news that Randy Moss ever received. The other thing too, I've felt as though Randy Moss as malcontent in 2007 was an overrated notion. Like you could say it toward the end of the time in Minnesota or even in that second run in Minnesota. You might have been able to say that. But what happened with the Raiders was this dude got over there and was like, wait a minute, y'all don't care? Okay, why am I still out here caring? And then he stopped caring. But it wasn't like he was in there destroying the place when he got there.
Oh, it was glorious. I'm glad they didn't care. I was in Denver at the time. Oh, loved playing against Randy Moss in Oakland. Didn't love playing against him in New England as much. But, yeah, I loved
that. Ran a go route every play, didn't he?
That's it. He just run a go route or jog off the line. Occasionally he run out, but he wasn't doing nothing else. And I would just get 20 yards off, just hang out.
True story. I had a former player tell me that what happened in Oakland was coaches told him, run a go route every play. Quarterback wouldn't throw in the ball on the go route. Why? Because he wasn't sight reading. That's how crazy it was in Oakland. And he had 1,000 yards receiving that first year in Oakland, too. That gets forgotten. But I remember one interview, they came and hollered at Randy, and it was like, and he was like, if nobody else cares, I don't understand why I'm supposed to care. Right? He's just like, what are we doing here if this is what it's supposed to be?
I'm going to need you to stop doing that on point Randy Moss impersonation.
I've been practicing it for years. I've been practicing the Randy Balls for years. My favorite is the thought of in Minnesota when it got bad, when apparently they say that he started wilding out. They had that team dinner or something, and somebody had a caterer come in, and Randy Moss is like, I wouldn't serve this food to my dog. Right? And then I'll never forget because there were like two sets of quotes that were coming in from different reporters, and it was clear who was talking to the fast guys, and it was clear who was talking to the blockers, and I could tell who was talking to the blockers because one of the people was like, and that food was good too. And I imagine Randy Moss being like, they ain't even got no seasoning on this food. My dog likes seasoning. You know, I was like, oh yeah, I know what's going on here. Like I am clearly gleaned what the difference is in this situation. And now we get to the other part with Antonio Brown, which is this lawsuit that has come out. And I am curious, as you are a little newer to this business, in terms of how to handle this, right?
Yeah.
Because my take, number one, always is remember the people are listening. And I've made this mistake before on different issues where you forget that people who are affected by these matters, not this particular type of thing, but people who are affected by these matters can hear you, and you have to be very careful not to be flippant and seemingly dismissive because it stops being just about this one case. It starts being about something bigger. Right. And so I read the paperwork that was filed on the Brown lawsuit. I see some things logically where I'm kind of like, I don't really understand how that worked, which is fair, I think, to say that there's room to have more questions. I am generally of the belief that it's hard to believe that there are many women in this world who will put their names on a sexual assault allegation, knowing everything that happens with that and be lying, right? It's hard to do. That being said, you regular broke dude, nobody out here in all likelihood making up a story about you to try to get paid. It's a little different when you got millions of dollars, right? The incentive structure is different. It is far more possible that somebody could do that which we consider to be inconceivable. But right now, I don't know nothing at all. And I'm okay saying I don't know nothing.
Yeah, now I think that, again, the point you made, I guess it was on High Noon, you said that you don't get no points for being right.
Like,
I'm in no hurry to pass judgment. I say alleged. I say those things because I know those are words that I'm supposed to say. And I say those to make sure that I'm acknowledging the fact that he is innocent until proven guilty. And I don't know, but I also at the same time understand that it's unlikely that it's rare that someone makes these things up. But I understand your point too, is that there's a different incentive structure in this place, but I don't know anything about her. The thing that I struggle with is how people are reacting to this because it is Antonio Brown.
Yes.
And this may be, not maybe, it's probably a lot because of my union experience, is that I understand that every player, every situation, when there's an allegation, especially one that's not even in criminal court yet, or has not even been filed, he hasn't been charged criminally yet, and maybe he will at some point, that you must treat that incident as if it were with any other player. And that's the question that keeps popping up in my mind. It's like, I'm not trying to stand for Antonio Brown. I learned through the mistakes that I made, or we all made at the union and the players, back when Pac-Man Jones first got into trouble, is that we were upset at him because he couldn't seem to get right. And we essentially gave the commissioner the go-ahead to punish him before any legitimate charges were filed. Doesn't matter whether he was right or wrong. That was the precedent that set, that kind of changed the way that Article 46 was interpreted. And so from that point on, that has changed the way I looked at this. And you have to think to yourself, I'm not going to name any particular player, but if there was another player who has a better reputation than Antonio Brown, I don't think people would be calling for him to be put on the commissioner's exempt list so quickly, or necessarily calling for him to be suspended so quickly, which is that's all I think that my responsibility is in this, is just to remind people that due process is something that we at least pretend to abide by.
Yeah, well, especially with a civil case, right?
Yeah,
like if the state comes in and says this,
they got evidence.
That's a little different, right? Right. There is no standard for a lawsuit.
Yeah.
You get a lawyer, you put out the paperwork, boom, there's a lawsuit. So when people are like, yeah, you got to get them off the field, that is a dangerous precedent to set. Right. And by the way, a precedent that Ben Roethlisberger, for example, caught those civil suits and nobody had, you know, the sort of setup. But I think this is where the failings of society as it relates to sexual assault now, like, get laid at the lap of the NFL, which, by the way, Raj asked for because Raj wanted to have a standard that was higher than the law. Right. But the fact that we as a society have treated women so poorly in the face of their allegations that I don't want to call it an overcorrection because I fear that sounds dismissive, but I do feel as though what has happened is a lot of people who care about these issues and are conscientious of them, their solution is, if you say you were sexually assaulted, I believe you. Right. When I think the answer should be, if you say you were sexually assaulted, I will listen to you. I will listen to everything that you say, and I will take you seriously until I am not to take you seriously anymore. Like, the math says I should take you seriously until we're not, but I can't act like this dude did it.
Yeah.
If I don't have any answer as to whether or not he actually did. So they're like, yeah, we'll put him on the list. The commissioner's exempt list, that ain't about, because Michael Vick's the first person I ever remember that they had this issue with. Man, that wasn't anything about adjudicating the matter. It was, we can't have no microphones in your face right here. Because remember, when all that blew up with Vic, there hadn't been a charge.
Yep.
So Vic was like, all right, I'm coming to camp. They're like, no, you can't come to my house, baby.
I mean, that's what it's always been about. And it's not about integrity or doing the right thing for the league. The league is about making money, and they make money in large part because of their perception. And that's what they're concerned with. They don't want, even though it's a small percentage of the players who engage in this type of activity, they don't want the league to be tarnished by this and to impact their ability to make money. They don't care necessarily. Yeah. I'm not going to say not at all. I'm sure that they have personal reasons to care. But fundamentally, the point of the commissioner's exempt list is to make the NFL look good or not bad. At
right.
Least.
Right. And I think with Brown and this case, now I also agree with this, that if the Patriots are like, nah, we're good, and they keep it moving, I'm not mad at them for that either.
That's what they
should do.
Yeah, that's like what they should do. They would get everybody off the hook if they would just be like, especially since they're going to be able to interview her next week. They can't interview her this week because of her wedding. They're going to interview her next week. So I think it would be very reasonable. It's reasonable for them to go ahead and play him. But I think in this situation, if I was Raj, and I guess he's probably burned all his bridges to New England, I would call him and just be like, look, this is the statement you make. Say that we're not going to put him on the field until after the young lady who's made the accusations can be interviewed.
Yeah.
And that's next week.
Right. Or they all say how hard this offense is to pick up, right? It's just going to take a little more time before he gets the offense,
something
baby.
Something like that.
That's all it is. But the problem is, if he does know the offense and you do that, Antonio ain't about to keep quiet about it. Next thing you know, there'll be some video.
And there's a chance that he doesn't even fit into the offense. And I know we pivoted away from that stuff. Like, that's a real possibility because in Pittsburgh, when he was his best, Big Ben is kind of a off-schedule player. And Antonio Brown thrived in that. That ain't Tom Brady.
Well, also, Ben, like, Mina made this point. Roethlisberger will heave it down the field and give you a chance. And Tom Brady, we haven't seen him do that since Randy Moss. And this ain't the Tom Brady of 2007. As much as people act like Tom Brady's still as good as he ever was, that's incorrect.
Yeah, if you watch that game, as they blew out the Steelers, you watch the game, you saw that Tom Brady was not as sharp as you would expect him to be, especially down the field.
Yo, and the bad passes look like 2015 Peyton Manning bad passes.
don't
not
say
saying
that.
He's the same guy, because not.
Yeah.
But they looked really, really bad. Like Drew Brees, another one. These cats get a little bit older. People just think that since you're just throwing the ball around and getting old, doesn't matter. And getting old matters.
Especially at this age. Like, they're not just old. They all old.
Yeah.
For football.
But I also saw something about Brown that's made the point that he did not play well last year against press coverage.
Yeah.
And that is something that it sounds like defenses then catch up to.
Nobody has the gumption to do that, though.
Yes.
So, like, if you don't play good against press coverage, that's fine. And I suspect that those numbers are limited because a lot of – and they might also be press coverage with help, because a player like Antonio Brown, I'll get up and press him when I got a safety over the top. But if you don't, you're less likely to press him because he's so quick and fast, and that combination is deadly. If he gets behind, gets next to you, he's behind you, and boy, he pushes off with the best of them.
Yeah, and so I look at like all that stuff that's going on with Brown, and then I look at his accuser, and this is my question for her, and I mean this like if I were her friend, this is sincerely the question I would ask: what do you hope to get from talking to the NFL? Like, I'm very curious, like, what her motivation is for doing it. And I'm not saying that as though, like, I wonder if she's on the up and up. Like, let's start with the assumption that everything she alleges happened, right? Like, let's start with that. Would you trust the NFL with this? Because I wouldn't.
I mean, I guess, what do you think she's going to lose? Because I think that there's possibility that she hopes to have Antonio Brown punished for the things he's done. So that's one thing that she could hope to gain. I'm not sure why she wouldn't. What would she hope to lose, or what could she potentially lose? I know the NFL is not good at these sort of things. I guess the entire story getting out or something. Like, what could the NFL do to bungle it?
Well, my thing with the NFL is that I find, at least it's looked in many cases, as though the NFL has decided their answer on these matters before they start the investigation, right? And then everything goes from there. So let's say that the NFL has decided, nah, we need this Antonio Brown thing to calm down. We want to keep this dude around. Let's say that's the play that they've already made. Can you imagine what an insulting interview that you might do with them could be?
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. And then they could certainly shape this issue in a way that they wanted to shape it. If this is the only group that's going to interview her, if there is no criminal case brought, then.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, I don't think the league has demonstrated itself at all to be credible. And I do understand to a degree. And like, I don't blame her if she's looking for some measure of like justice. Right. Yeah. But this is kind of the game now, is if you mad at somebody, let me go try to have you fired. Right. Like Brett Stevens of the New York Times sending an email to that dude's boss. Of course, that's a different situation than this one. But this seems to be, we find justice often, it seems, by trying to go after people's jobs. I don't feel like the NFL is concerned with justice on these matters. Yeah. Therefore, I don't think I would go to them looking for justice necessarily.
Yeah, there's nothing for her to gain from going to them, but I guess other than this measure of justice, while him losing his job or being fined or punished is not actual justice in this case.
Right.
I mean, it's hard. I'm not a victim of anything like this, so it's hard for me to understand. I could imagine being a victim of something and just wanting to, like, cause him some pain.
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine that. And if I'm in my heart, it's like, if I go tell NFL what's going to happen, he's going to get suspended. And I could imagine that she could come to that based on other precedent. Then I feel like I would do that, because I would just want to, like, make him hurt in some way.
That makes sense. And I hope for her sake that she is prepared for the possibility that they ain't going to do a damn thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that is what I am hopeful of. And I think it bothers me so much that the NFL has so little credibility on these issues, right? They decided they wanted to do this, and then they bungled so many of them, where you can't trust what it is that they did or did not. Because I was talking to somebody yesterday about this, and they made a very good point where they were like, a handful of these allegations that we've had in various forms that have come out have been discredited, and we don't talk about it nearly enough. Like Reuben Foster, for example, I'm a person that probably got out a little bit too early on that one, but the allegation against him has been kind of discredited. Tyreek Hill, the allegation against him based on the incomplete rendering of that tape that we received, you heard the longer tape and it was like, oh, okay, so I see why this dude did not get fired. Got it, right? We don't talk about those things nearly as much. And so for Brown, now that this has come out, if the NFL decides or says, no, we don't think this happened, would you believe it? And if the NFL says we do believe this happened,
no.
Would you believe it?
No. I would. I mean, I have a longer history with the NFL and not being able to believe the things that they say. But I feel like the trouble is their guiding principle is not justice, and their guiding principle is not fairness. Their guiding principle is protecting the shield, which is why I think if someone comes to them and it's not public, their reaction is to try to keep it as quiet as possible.
Right.
If it's already something that's public, their reaction is to try to separate themselves from the individual. So my guess in this situation is if they could find something to be able to penalize Antonio Brown, that's likely what they'll do because they don't care about Antonio Brown. They don't care whether he's treated fairly or not. And they don't care about the victim either, to be honest with you. And again, maybe there's some personal feeling there, but the real guiding principle is like, we don't want this to hurt our business.
Right. Before I forget, Gabe, it's hold music time.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
So yeah, no, this is for the league. You decided you wanted to get in this business.
Yeah.
Now you are in this business. And with the Patriots, I think I said on TV yesterday, I get why the Patriots put him on the field. The coach is the general manager. And on top of that, Bob Kraft is not the guy that can be out here like, oh, an allegation? That's enough for me.
Yeah, he has the history of allegations himself. But I'm still surprised, honestly, that they're going to put him on the field. But I mean, I understand your logic behind it. But the real question I had is, how much did they know beforehand? And that's something we haven't gotten a necessarily clear answer to. It seemed that Drew Rosenhaus knew.
He knew it might come.
Which suggests to me that he had to. Like, I don't know his level of integrity, but.
Oh, I wouldn't tell him. You wouldn't either.
You got to tell him.
Yo, this woman claimed that she going to sue me.
If you're an agent, so I think players forget this, and like all businesses where you have agents, you're what's in your best interest is to maintain good relationships with
that
the team.
That is very true.
It's not in your best interest because we gonna come and go.
That is very true.
Agent gonna still want a relationship with the executives at ESPN.
Yes.
And we gonna come and go. Agent still gonna want a good relationship with all the GMs. You can't be the guy who pulled a fast one on them when you want to move players in the future.
All right, so maybe not a fast one, right? But maybe a kind of quick one, right? Like you tell them, hey guys, about to sign this paperwork, send it off to you. But before I do, just want to let you know, there's this thing going on. Is that when you tell them? Because you sure don't say, by the way, any team that's thinking about signing Antonio, there's something that you ought to know on the front end.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way that one's going to wind up playing.
Yeah, you don't do it off the top. You got to do it right before you sign the papers. Like, I just want to make sure you knew this before.
Yeah, and so, yeah, no, because you're right. That is the thing about the agent. The agent, like, people are like, man, agents, they lie and they say anything. No, that's not really how it works because the agent, the reason you get the agent is because they deal with those people all the time.
Right. Yeah.
And so you really can't, you can massage some things a little bit, right? But they're not just going to be out here flat out lying. And so I would love to know like Belichick's reaction once he found that out.
Yeah, that's the real interesting stuff. Like we'll get to that we'll get to that at some point. I hope we'll get that information, but that I don't know how that worked out because I assume they had to know and they made the decision to bring him on anyway, which seems very unpatriot like to bring in like air quotes like a distraction.
Well, I mean, they did bring in this one dude who like killed people.
Yeah.
And by the way, if all that talk about NFL security and draft research says anything, then they knew something about Aaron Hernandez. Like they were aware, maybe not necessarily that he was a serial killer.
Right.
But they were aware that he was a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
And they were like, but we can get him in the third round. Right?
Yeah.
The third round, huh? Yeah, we'll roll the dice on that.
I mean, there are lots of stories, though, of guys who slip in the draft because of character issues that end with guys turning out to be great players. Very few of them end with guys
killing people.
Killing people. So, like, in the NFL research defense, they probably saw this. Oh, yeah, he just like that other guy we had who used to fight all the time.
Yes. But also, and I don't think that NFL teams should be existing with, like, a super great deal of, like, surveillance on their players, although it did kind of step up after the Hernandez thing. But what happens is they do all that research before they get you, and then once you're there, All right, cool. Well, now you hear it. Now we'll figure this out.
That's very true. That was the only thing they do is like they give you a number to call, which they probably don't even do anymore because of Uber. They're like, all right, don't be out drinking and driving. Call this number.
Yep.
And then there's normally every team has a head of security type of guy who's often an ex-police officer. He stays in the loop. He knows the places to go, places not to go. And it steps up after things happen. You know, my friend and teammate in Denver, Darren Williams, yep. Was murdered at one of the nightclubs. And so that next year, security around us was intense. It was something that I did not expect.
Right, yeah. Inspect.
Yeah, I didn't inspect it either. I certainly didn't expect.
All right, we'll be back with more of Dominique Foxworth in a minute. But first, you heard us talking about Hims and how they are helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it's time to see what they're all about. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, and that's a big problem. Trust me. A lot of guys sit there and do nothing about it when they can turn to medicine and science. Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. Well, there's a solution, and it's for Hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Prescription solutions backed by science. Hims was created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. No more awkward in-person doctor's visits or long pharmacy lines. For Hims connects you to real doctors online, which can save you hours, completely confidential and discreet. Answer a few quick questions, a doctor will review, and if they determine it's right for you, can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about, featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, Playboy, to name a few. Order now. My listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. It's subject to doctor's approval. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's FORHIMS.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. To use this as a transition to another topic, but I think you'll find this interesting. Let me tell you a great story about the word inspect. So I was at my homeboy's house once for Thanksgiving, and apparently his granny be falling for scams. And so she was trying to get us on a scam to somebody that got her on. But it was a great pyramid scheme, because normally the pyramid scheme is about getting people under you, but this pyramid scheme was about teaching people how to get people under them. Right? So he was like, yo, I'm not trying to con you. I'm trying to put you up on game so that you can go con other people. And so it was on this videotape that she wanted us to watch, and they were all like, yo, we don't want to watch it, but it ain't my granny, right? So like, if she tell me that we watching this, then we watching this, you know? God. And so at some point they're like, I suspect that this is a con. And she looked up and said, you gonna suspect or inspect? And yo, once she said that, I'm like, guys, we're watching the video. I have no answer in return for inspect or suspect. Right?
I got questions about your man. I guess it's your granny. You can't stop her. But I'd have had to put my foot down. I don't know how old he was, if there was a whooping in line, but I'm not about to let my grandmother try to sell my friends on a scam.
No. They didn't watch. Right? Okay, they all decided we not going to do it. And I sat there for a while just kind of like, so, I mean, I'm well into my 30s when this is happening, by the way. Like, I'm an adult. Everybody here is an adult. Her daughter is the one that shut it down. But like, yo, man, your whole family turned against you. Granny, you just fed me in your home. I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I was like,
you have to watch it. Yeah. But I wouldn't have let you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I was down to watch. I was like, let me see how this goes. And the dude was like, and I'm going to tell you where I learned all these secrets. Organized religion. So basically, he used to be a con artist selling Jesus. And then that, by the way, was a detail of that Antonio Brown paperwork, if it was to believe to be true, that he was Bible macking.
the statement they put out where he said that he was kind of gonna, or his lawyer said that they were gonna fight to protect players who are being extorted. Like, that seemed like an unnecessary addition.
Unless you're actually being extorted.
No. It's fine if you are protecting yourself against extortion. Mm-hmm. It just seemed weird to put in there. I don't know what he accomplished by putting in there, we are fighting against it suggested that there is rampant extortion amongst players, which I didn't think was.
Well, Heitner, go hard. Like, I've seen some things about the way, like, this is, he handles these things on the offensive. Yeah. Like, that's what his game plan is on these matters is that he is going to, like, he's going to attack it,
yeah.
Which you better be right about that one.
Yeah.
Like if that is the approach that you are going to take, you better be right about that one. By the way, the Dolphins are playing in Miami where this incident allegedly happened.
Patriots.
And they are, yeah, Patriots, yes. And they are playing the worst team in captivity, the Miami Dolphins. And like, did you ever play on like a super sorry team?
Never.
That's right, cause you played in Denver and Denver's played been pretty Denver. Consistently not sorry.
I got traded to Atlanta. I thought we was going to be super sorry. We happened to make the playoffs and then I signed in Baltimore and we were good. I never played, at any point in high school, I think my freshman year, we were sorry. Other than that, I've been on good teams.
I can't imagine every day coming to play for a sorry team.
This...
it sounds miserable.
It sounds miserable, and it's not just the misery of coming in every day, going through a game plan, working out, breaking your back to know that you're going to lose. It's the pain that comes along with that, the physical and emotional pain, and it's the cost on your career. Like this, what they're doing is, and maybe Cleveland did this to a different degree. It wasn't as blatant or obvious necessarily, but like what they're doing to these guys' careers and what they're doing to their bodies is unfair while you sit up in the top of whatever building you're in your soft office and you're thinking, well, we're going to build for the future. But I'm out here right now.
Right.
Like I'm out here now and I'm putting this bad play on tape because you don't want to help me. And I'm putting my body on the line, particularly running backs and quarterbacks who are, and I mean, not just them, defensive players, linebackers who are relying on the D line, keeping offensive linemen from banging them in the face and the safeties who are relying on corners to alert them from the crack blocks. Like you putting me out there without the best possible people around me is bad for my health. It's bad for my long-term career prospects. It's all around bad, all because you want this team to be good in the future. That'd be fine if I own some equity.
Right.
I ain't going to be here when you guys start paying off or you start cashing in on all this stuff that I just paid for.
And also, cashing in how and doing what, right? Because people are like, it worked for Cleveland. When?
Yeah.
Like, here's how it worked for Cleveland so far. You got Baker Mayfield and you got Odell Beckham. They just got beat 43-13. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get beat every game 43-13, but they don't even actually have any receipts yet that they've put up. And to me, it's different when you start talking about doing this in baseball, and it comes with its own problems. Basically, nobody wants to pay to watch it. But yeah, you got all this stuff happening. Okay, the Astros figured out how to get it done. Cool. Yay. Good for them. The Sixers in basketball. When are you guys going to get past the second round of the playoffs? Like, you're telling me that this has worked for them. They got the two superstar players that you tanked to hope to get, and they still haven't made it past the second round of the playoffs. But none of those dudes are risking their lives
right
in the course of doing this. And that's my thing. Like, competence saves lives. That's what I said the other day about this in football, is that competence is the only thing that might save your life playing this absurd game that dudes are out here playing. And so you're going to tell Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen, well, at least you had no Tunsil. Sorry.
Nope,
sorry.
We'll take him too.
No, you just play it behind a bunch of fag dudes.
Yeah.
That's it.
I could understand, and I still don't love it for other sports, and I would disagree with you for the 76ers. It's worked. Whether they get deep in the playoffs or they win, that may be a slight on the coaching or a slight on the players, but the goal in the NBA is to get star players.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So they did that. The next part, getting it across the finish line, is not the fault of the process. So the process worked to accomplish what it was supposed to accomplish. And the same thing for the Astros. They won a World Series. That's fine. But those sports are so, so, so different. I imagine that there were a lot of guys on the 76ers team that was, they wouldn't have been in the NBA otherwise.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the flip side of that, because Pablo makes that point too, and I agree with him. Yeah, there were some dudes, and by the way, none of them are still in the NBA,
right,
except for like Robert Covington. Like, he's the one that figured out how to make it work. But the flip side is cats like Nerlens Noel, who were first round picks in this madness, and then their careers never recovered from the misery. Or poor Jahlil Okafor, that was out here whooping ass in the street, you know, because of all this stuff that was going on there, and then he never turned it around. Like, there are dudes that are wasting very good years of their careers to go along with this farce that you have decided is better for the team. And I think it is cruel and inhumane to the people that you ask to come to work every day and do this. And that, see, that's my thing, is that the losing, it's not like these guys just go out there like, oh, lost another game, just go home. The cast that gets to high levels of this, losing be hitting y'all in the stomach, man.
Yeah, it hurts. It's something that sticks with you. And it's, again, like, that emotional cost is real. The physical cost is real in all sports, but it's heightened in football, which is a collision borderline combat sport. And then on top of it, you are hurting my ability to get a job going forward. Cause you put me out here with guys who can't play, and maybe I'm a guy who can't play. You don't expose me like that, put me out there with guys who can play so that I can look good and I can get a check somewhere.
Right.
And also, like, there are going to be players who get injured, and it's, while we can't prove a negative, you could argue that some of these players may have stayed healthy if you put them in a better situation. That's just not fair, because they are paying this price for a gift that they're not going to be able to receive.
And you also wind up, like, in that position like Xavier Howard, dude, right? Yeah. So, like, let's say, I'm trying to think of who else, like, I guess Minka Fitzpatrick might be somebody who fits this description. Right. They come to you and they're like, hey, man, how'd you like to sign a contract extension? And NFL players, I mean, basketball players do largely, but yo, you signed the extension. Yeah, you got to take the security. Who wants to double down on more of this, right? And Brian Flores, all money ain't good money, my dude.
Yeah.
I, no way I take this job.
Yeah, that's not a job that you want. I mean, anybody, it's that's a real bad situation for him to be in. Like, there's no, I guess Brett Brown, you could argue that he's still around, and if he doesn't make it deeper in the playoffs, like you mentioned, he won't be around for much longer. But, like, you are doing a job, and the only way you take that check is if you're like, I'm never going to get another chance, let me cash in, because they pay good money to be a head coach in NFL. And you're like, all right, I'm going to take these lumps. I don't know what he signed for. He probably make 4 or 5 a year or something like
better.
That. Yeah, he should make more than that. But I'm going to take these lumps and get this 15-3 or whatever, and I'm going to go on about my business. Because there's, or he goes in there and he's like, I'm such a great coach that I'm going to overcome all this. And I'm sure whatever illusions that he had were dashed last weekend by one Lamar Jackson.
Yo, Lamar Jackson and Hollywood Brown.
Ooh.
Like, at what moment do you think Hollywood Brown realized, oh, nobody can stay in front of me? Cause you know what it looked like? It looked like when you play Madden on, like, pro or all pro. You know what I'm saying? Where it's just like, no, somebody's going to be open on every play. And I'm still, like, I'm not sure how this is ultimately going to go for Lamar Jackson. But, man, he couldn't have asked for a better week one.
They called a fake punt on him.
I didn't notice that.
In the first half, they was up, might have been 35. They was up by a ton. And they called a fake punt that went for, like, 60 yards. And I just remember
Hold
thinking,
on, the Ravens called the fake punt?
The Ravens.
Yo, we got to fight. Right? Like, here's the one thing about it, man. If I'm on this sorry-ass team, right, I've been waiting to fight somebody. We have to fight. Ain't no Ray Lewis out here no more. We have to fight.
I just want to know what the handshake was like. Like, this is his first game in the NFL.
Yo, there ain't no handshake after that. Like, y'all know what this is. There is no handshake. Like, you know, I'm all about running up the score. I'm all about to beat them down.
But the players, it wouldn't be for the players. Because what happens in a blowout like that, in the NFL at least, is the players at a certain point, they come to an understanding. They're like, all right, we good, we good.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, this is out of reach. We good, we good. But the coaches, that's what I'm thinking. Brian Flores should have toe off on Harbaugh after that game.
Walking to midfield with, like, that finger out.
You want fake punt me? It was bad. Yeah, I'll find the exact score for you. But the game was already out of reach before halftime. And it's like 3 minutes before halftime. It's like 3 or 4 minutes before halftime. And he's like, all right, let's just go and punt it back. Y'all not going to score. Let's go to halftime. He's like, nope, we're going to fake punt it, set up another touchdown.
He's like, no,
Lamar,
that's the read.
Yeah.
That's the read, right? Like if we see this, we run the fake punt, right? I don't make the rules.
They were backed up too. They were like on their own 20. And you know, Harbaugh's a special teams coach and at his heart. So he was just so excited.
So tell me this. Who here on the Dolphins is the guy who never gets over losing, right? Because there's a certain point where I feel like for guys, it's just like, yo, this is life. It's a business, right. So forth and so on. But let's go through some names on the Miami Dolphin roster, and let's see who we can figure out is the one who never, ever, ever is going to make peace with what this is. Oh, wow. The problem is I'm looking at one of these rosters that's first initial and last name,
oh, well,
and the Dolphins are too sorry for me to be, like, gleaning these things. Like, I don't know who you are. No, it's still too many of these. Like, how funny would it be, though, if it was like Jake Ruddock, you know, right? The third string quarterback. I can't take it no more.
that's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. I mean, it might be Wilkinson.
Oh, Christian Wilkins?
Oh, yeah. Not Wilkinson, Christian Wilkins.
Oh, yeah, like, dude. It's been so long since he was on the sorry team.
He ain't lost it forever.
It's been so long since he's been on. I always wonder about that. Like with Jerry Stackhouse. You remember Jerry Stackhouse beat Jeff Hornacek down? And I thought about that. That was the sorriest team Jerry Stackhouse had ever been on in his life. And you do it like you losing 60 games. You may not have lost 60 games in your life
you can't put
up until that point.
Sheesh. But, yeah, I think Wilkins. But, all right, he's a rookie. So
how about that Jerome Baker guy? Didn't they just get him? Raekwon McMillan from Hinesville, Georgia.
Hinesville, Georgia don't sound like he deal with losing well.
No.
Football's in your blood down there.
Rashad Jones, I always worry about the strong safety. They bang for buck on these matters. Yes. John Jenkins.
It's going to be somebody on defense because O-linemen don't say nothing. They just go with the flow.
What about like the guy that's just here to play special teams?
Nah, special teams guy's cool.
Oh, because they try to make it.
Yeah, they're going to get their checks as long as they – still getting their tackles. They're good. Especially these guys. Cool. It's going to be somebody on defense. Going to be a good player on defense.
By the way, did you realize that they had Kim DJ?
I didn't.
Yeah, Kim DJ. He's on the pup list right now. Okay. And not that Kim DJ is necessarily going to be the guy to lose it under these circumstances. I'm just imagining a weirdo like Kim DJ on a team like this.
But so at some point in the season, the snap is going to happen. And then from that point, they're just going to go and like, pack it in for the rest of the year.
Yes.
Because right now, they still believe they're going to find a chance to win. I know this sounds crazy to everyone who's listening. They believe they're going to find a way to win for the next few weeks. And then at some point, somebody going to lose it. Somebody going to – the coach going to pull some sort of hard practice nonsense. That's what always happens. Like, nah, we got to get tougher. Yeah. That's going to happen. Then somebody going to say something to him and be like, nah, this ain't the problem. It's y'all. And then it's going to be a snap. It's going to be a mutiny. And then they done for the year.
Yeah, you play with my man Foster, right?
Oh, yeah.
George is because George is on that Lions team,
yeah,
the 0-16 Lions team, and he said that, you know, that was the year that Kanye and Jeezy I put on for my city came out, and so he said start the season I put on for my city. He's like, yeah, they be in the tunnel getting ready, and then he looked up one week and they wasn't playing it no more. And he was like, so y'all don't want us to put on for the city no more. y'all don't want us to put on? Oh, okay.
I've never been on a team that the only year I missed the playoffs was because we lost in the last game when I was in Denver. I've never been on a team where I was playing in games that didn't matter. And I don't know what that must feel like. I can't imagine where you show up and like, we win. Oh, well, we lose. Nothing changes. And at some point this season, them guys going to show up and be like, oh, well.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how that must feel because it's, again, it's violent. You go out there, it's violent. You can't go out to a fight like, I don't care whether I get beat up or I don't. I can't imagine that. I don't know. This is upsetting me. I'm getting stressed out just thinking about it right now. Like walking, putting your helmet and shoulder pad on, going in the tunnel, and they playing all the smoke and the music. Everybody bopping around on the other team with their headphones on, getting hype, and I'm just listening to some gospel or something. Like,
and it's 8,000 people. Right, especially with the Dolphins. The thing that people I don't think understand about Miami, when they start talking about attendance, whether it be with the Hurricanes, like I'm saying this particularly with the football team.
Right.
Y'all don't understand how hot it is out there. Like, if I'm going to spend 3 hours in the sun in Miami, much better ways for me to spend 3 hours in the sun. You know, I can go to the beach. I can go all, you know, somebody's boat. There are much better ways for me to go about doing this. Ain't nobody showing up if it's 85 degrees outside to watch the sorry Dolphins. Nobody. And you got to drive way out to get there. Nobody's going to do this. You're going to be out there in front of like 5,000 people just getting waylaid.
This is hurting my heart, man. Like I was like taking a position, a very emotional position very early on out of respect for these guys. But now I'm starting to put myself in those shoes and I cannot imagine. And then I guess you just like wait till, checks come through and you just look at your check and hope that put a smile on your face.
Right. But also something that people forget here. Most of those guys make a lot of money. Not even most. A lot of them dudes. Right. Okay. This is going to sound terrible and I need you here to help me because you can help me with what I'm going to say. And people need to get this. I understand that for you in your life, the idea that somebody is paying you $550,000 sounds like the most absurd sum of money in the world, and you just can't imagine making that much money. I'm here to tell you, I'm not lying here. it's really not that much money.
This is why it's not that much money. Because let's say you work whatever your career is. Let's say you make $55,000 a year. In 10 years, you make $550,000. They do not have careers that last for 10 years.
Right.
This is the, considering the fact that they have essentially made the decision from the time that they were at high school, at least, to focus on football. They didn't do internships in college. They took a major that made them, that prepared them for the NFL, that made them available for practice. And then they spend however many years they do in the league playing football. You have kind of given up a lot of your most profitable years or the years that will set you up. And there are plenty of like great, beautiful stories about guys who went back to school and guys who figured some things out. But you have to completely reprogram yourself in order to enter the normal workforce and find some other job. The fact of the matter is your prime earning years are going to be condensed. So while somebody else might have a 30-year career, 40-year career, whatever, 50-year career, all that money-making time you have, for the most part, football players have that all condensed into this 4-year or 10-year, however long career. So that's why $55,000 is a lot of money if you're going to make it for several years. But many of those guys are going to make it for two.
Right. That's a, most like 2 or 3 years. Because right. The dudes we're talking about right now are sorry.
Yes.
Right? The whole reason we're having this discussion is because they are sorry.
They're going to make, and then you go through all the taxes or whatever. And let's say if they are really frugal with their money, chances are they may walk away after 2 years with a couple $100,000 in the bank.
Yep.
That ain't going to last you for the rest of your life. So that's why it's not that much money. But when you get that check,
right,
it got a comma on and a couple digits after the comma, you're like, oh, that's nice.
But we haven't even talked yet about the people around you that want money, the people that you have to pay along the way. And you said this about taxes. Look, man, I'm just going to say this out here to those of y'all who are listening, because I went from making regular people money to not making regular people money. And I don't look at my pay stubs because I would change all of my political sensibilities if I did. I would be voting for totally different people if I sat around and I looked at my pay stub every day, because they be taking, dog. Like the federal tax rate at 35% over that certain amount of money that you get. Yo, y'all don't, man, the man get his. The people are like, if you don't vote, you don't have a say. I could never vote for the rest of my life, but damn it, I got a say, because I am invested in this. I got shares of stock in this government. This government need to give me a good seat when I show up to the shareholders meeting to talk about that. I feel like they should make me a congressman just on the strength of what I put in on this. Right? No, the tax man coming to get these boys. Y'all don't know, man. That tax, woo!
But Florida is one of the no state taxes places. So they just get hit federal.
Yeah, yeah. Let me tell you this too. That's very true. I used to live in Florida.
Yeah, I know.
All right. And it's good to not have that state tax, because when I got here, I was like, yo, I thought I got a raise, right?
Oh, boy.
But let me tell you, even still, the Fed man come to get you in Florida, and it still feel like something, man. Still feel like something. And so these cats, they're not making as much money as what they're making is more money than you, which is not the same thing as making as much money as you think.
The interesting thing, like obviously I was an athlete, so like it always hit me the wrong way when people would get upset when athletes complain and they throw out there like you make so much money. And I always wondered, like, would they be okay with, when I heard them complain about their job, I point to the other like 70% of the world who make less than them and be like, but man, these people over here on the farms in China would die to have your money. Like, it's at what point does your distance between other people make it so that you're not allowed to complain? That's always what bothered me. Like, if you have things that bother you about your job, that's fine. If you make $50,000 a year, I can go through slum favelas in Brazil and there'll be a lot of people who be like, man, how could you complain? You make $50,000 a year.
Right. Like, I was talking to somebody once about, like, some of the difficulties of being recognizable.
Yeah.
And I was specifically in this case talking about somebody coming up. Like, me and Michael Smith went to Vegas during Summer League. And so we're posted up having breakfast. And, you know, people will recognize you as it goes. And, you know, you talk to them. I got a fork in my hand, right? Pancake, eggs on it. And a dude like, hey, do you mind if I take a selfie? And I'm like, yes. Because I will tell you no, like the DeMarcus Lawrence thing with the kid.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, no, people are going to tell you no sometimes. It's whatever. I reserve the right to tell you no. I'm not going to be a jerk about it. But, like, especially if I'm out with people,
yeah,
then I'm going to tell you no because out of respect for these people that I'm here with. Like, especially if I'm, like, with a woman, if it's a date, yeah, I owe her my undivided. And to be honest, it'll probably get me somewhere, me demonstrating that, you know.
Yeah, that's a good move.
It's me and you. It's me and you right now. Ain't none of this.
You got to make sure you say that, too.
Yeah.
Like, no, man, I would, but, I mean. I gotta be. I gotta
show some respect.
Show some respect.
Yeah. You know, so you get that. But I was telling somebody about it once, and their response was, "Well, you are famous," and I'm like, "Yo, that's not the point here. I know why this happens. You know what I mean? Like, I understand why it is that this goes on. I'm telling you, I don't like it. Right." And you get to not like it.
Yeah.
And that's what I imagine when these cats come off work complaining. And worse for the football players because they are in actual physical pain. And so they coming off work complaining about it. People are like, yeah, but you make a lot of money. And they're like, my head has hurt for 5 days in a row.
Gronk said he had indentations in his head and fluid all out of his head. But I think it's actually probably different, or it's becoming a little different for football players. I don't think that many people that I remember growing up, people used to say, I would play for free. I don't think anybody's saying that anymore. Like, even regular fans, like, you can go to the deepest part of the South where football is religion. You find whatever alcove in Texas you want. I feel like you could ask one of those fans, like, you would play it for free? I think even those fans would be like, nah, they're going to have to break me off some of that money.
Yeah, nah, man. No, I always say this. What they pay y'all to play football? No thanks, dog. No thanks. That's not enough money for me. Anybody that says, I don't want to play. I don't care why it is that you don't want to play. If they not paying you enough money to make this worth it for you, then cool. Go ahead. Don't play.
That's what happened to me. I got to the point where they was like, why don't you do it for this much? Nah. That ain't enough for me, my friend.
But especially me as, like, person with options.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You would be singing a different song if you were in a different position, but you're not in that position.
No. Well, no, let's be clear about this, right? Most of these guys that I cover, they are going to make more money in the time frame that we're discussing.
Yeah.
But for a lot of them in lifetime earnings,
no.
And because I don't have some of the same responsibilities that they do, like, they think I got lucky on, I think you're in a similar.
Yeah.
Every now and then somebody hits you up needing some money, but I ain't got people that need my money in that way. Like, I know, like, and this is something that gets lost, regular people living like this. There's so many regular people who pay their parents' mortgages and everything like that. Like, I've been fortunate in that I don't have any such person like that in my life, right? Nobody's asking me for bread. Like, I'm good. So, like, 15 years from now, a lot of these guys that we cover, not because they were irresponsible or anything, I am going to have more money than they do, and I'm going to be walking around here feeling good, upright.
I mean, that's not just true for you. Like, you're in this unique situation. That's true for a lot of people that are listening to this.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, there are star players, but for by and large, the NFL, because of the way the salary structure is it's young guys that get cycled through in 4 years, and then there's superstars. So people who are listening aren't going to have more money than superstars, but a lot of people who are listening, over the course of, and this goes back to the numbers we were talking about earlier, over the course of their life, they will earn more money than a lot of these players who will only play 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no, and it's like, and again,
they
won't
have CTE.
Yeah, well, yo, that is the, like, you know, and people lose sight of this, like, just regular, like, basketball players, man. There's a lot of wear and tear just from running up and down the floor, right? There's wear and tear if you work at UPS, right? Carrying these boxes, you know, chucking these things across and everything else. Ain't nobody hitting you in the chest.
I mean, the thing that really, so like the CTE as it came, I was already in the league when that started to become a thing and it was terrifying. And I've gotten to the point now where, like, I feel good. Like, I can't predict what's going to happen or whatever, but whatever. I'm fine with that. It's a thing. It's a decision that I was not allowed to make in the same way that guys can make that decision now.
Right.
But the CTE leading to, like, early onset Alzheimer's and things like that, that's scary and it's frustrating, but it's scary for the people around me, which is I won't necessarily have to deal with it while I may physically be here. Mentally, I may not be. The thing that really is kind of scaring me more now is ALS. So, like, O.J. Bergantz was the guy who played linebacker for the Ravens, and they kept him around the program. He's a guy who had ALS. It has ALS. And ALS, for those who don't know, they call it Lou Gehrig's disease, and essentially all your muscles essentially deteriorate, and you lose function of everything, but nothing happens to your brain, and you become, like, like, was it, Hawking?
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking is an example of it. Like the famous, scientist who's died, where you are like talking through a machine and you may be able to operate a wheelchair by blowing into a tube. Like that type of stuff. Like that being a prisoner in your own body. Like it's terrible. And yeah. the statistics suggest that the head injuries can lead to higher, occurrence of that sort of stuff. And that's scary.
Yeah, like I remember my brother would talk
about. No amount of money worth that.
Yeah, my brother talked about meeting you and he said it was after you had seen Concussion. And he was like, it's like watching a horror movie except it's about you.
Yep. Yep. No, I wrote the piece for, that was part of the reason why I got a job here is I wrote that piece for USA Today about watching that movie, and the movie wasn't that good, but it had a different impact on me sitting in there with all them people who was like being introduced at the same time. It was like, yeah, this is a horror story when you don't know where the assailant is.
But you're asking people to do this in Miami right now with no chance of the payoff. No chance of the positive.
Well, maybe they'll win a Super Bowl in 2025 and it'll all be worth it.
All right. Well, that is my man, Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at The Undefeated. Check him out on First Take. Check him out on,
Get Up.
Appreciate you for the Foxworth Fridays this summer when I decided I wasn't coming to work no Fridays.
You ain't gotta thank me. I need to thank you. I appreciate you for giving me that extra airtime.
No, this is real talk though, man. Like, you real good at this. Like, not everybody walks in and is able to kind of get the rhythm of how this stuff goes while still, like, being themselves. Like, you do work at this, man.
Nah, you told me that nobody said they hated me, while it sounds dumb, that's a big thing.
No, that's huge.
Cause anytime I've ever filled in, there's been a few times where I filled in for other people and other stuff, and automatically they're like, man, I can't wait till Dan come back. I can't wait till somebody come back. So the idea that you could fill in and people didn't hate me, that's a win, boy.
And my parents enjoyed.
What?
Yeah, and they'll tell me when they don't. just so you know. They will tell me when
that's
they don't.
Awesome.
They give scout reports, man. But check him out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, Hims. Be sure to check out the Woj Pod. He's got Clippers coach Doc Rivers and Heat coach Eric Spoelstra as guests. Also, remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.